This is the sound of the Kootenays. Hello again to you, my dear listeners out there in the world, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the show. I'm your host, Al Woodman, and I've got another great show for you this time around. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Craig Beauchamp and Sam Matthews from Nelson bass band The Hilties. Now, I recorded this interview in February, before our world changed so drastically due to the COVID-19 outbreak. It was back in a time that seems almost unrecognizable to us now. Bands were booking tours, and festivals were confirming lineups, and people were eagerly anticipating spring and the warmer weather and gathering in groups of any size to enjoy events together. I guess there's no reason to describe our current reality that we're living in now, except to shed light on what it's like for a band who's had their album release tour canceled and now must navigate a new reality to find ways to stay engaged and connected to its fans. So I've decided to keep the original interview intact, to show just how much work and time and money and energy goes into booking a tour, and to give some perspective on what so many other artists are facing right now. I also have some follow-up conversation that I recorded with Craig just a couple of days ago to offer the most up-to-date info on how they're dealing with the social distancing period we're now currently in. Now, in terms of the glass half full or half empty perspectives, I'm generally a guy who is just happy to have a glass to hold water in the first place. So naturally, I'm looking for some brighter spots to focus on in these strange times. And here's what I've noticed. Number one, musicians are like water. They're going to play no matter what obstacle comes up. Everyone is presenting it in such a beautiful and raw form. There's no tricks, there's no fancy lights or costumes or production. Heck, some people aren't even wearing makeup. It's like you're sitting in their living rooms or their kitchen with them, playing songs and sharing stories. And I love that so many layers of BS are being stripped away. Now, I can't help but think of how many ways this will change how artists engage with fans going forward. It will be interesting to see how that plays out. Number two, new music. Lots more time on hand means that there's a lot more music being created. One thing I wonder, though, how many songs will feature the phrase, flattening the curve? Are we sick of that one yet? Number three, have we all not had a major reality check here? Are we all noticing how valuable our connection to one another really is, now that we're all living at this distance from each other? I was remarking to a friend about how amazing it will be to give and get a hug from someone when things loosen up. That embrace that might have only lasted a second or two before could last much longer and feel much more important. Unless, of course, you're someone who's not interested in hugging and finding this whole social distancing thing to be a nice reprieve from everybody's touchy-feely way of approaching things, in which case, you're probably enjoying this a lot more than those of us who would like to embrace our friends and our family that we haven't seen in a long time. I guess the truth here is that none of us really know what our new reality is going to look like on the other side of this pandemic. But I can guarantee that artists and musicians will continue to create, no matter what the circumstances, and we will all benefit from them, because I know that everybody is tuning in and looking to music especially to help get them through these very trying and interesting times we're living in. So without further ado, I'm pleased to present my conversation with Craig and Sam from Nelson bass band The Hilties.
teaching me how to use a pen. It soothes and scents the pain that's in my head and shaves the hues again. I'm a stranger to my friends. On and on it goes, and on and on it goes.
My guests here on The Sound of the Kootenays, we have Craig and Sam from the Hilties. Welcome aboard. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah. I feel like I say this for almost every interview that I've done so far. Not that there's been that long a list of them, but everybody that I've had on the show has been somebody that came to mind when I was first dreaming up putting the show together in the first place, and you guys were definitely on the list as well, and I was like, oh, it'd be great to sit down and get the story of the Hilties. So
perfect.
Yeah.
There's a new album in the works. Mm-hmm. But let's maybe just back up a little bit and talk about sort of the origins of the Hilties.
Okay.
On Craig's side. Yeah. I joined about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
But, Hilties have been around for what, 4 or 5 years?
It kind of got incepted back when the flood happened in Calgary. Mark and I, who's the lead singer, had a friend in Calgary who was losing their house, and they needed help because there was people looting and all sorts of stuff. So we packed up our stuff and went to Calgary, and were, you know, helped with that one house, and then ended up helping more and more people and doing a lot of demolition. We were ripping up really nice Santos mahogany floors with a Hilti power driver.
Yeah.
And at the end of one of the days, you know, I met Mark working at Shambhala Music Festival. We were building stages up there together, and I'd always kind of wanted to play with him and hadn't found the right project, and we were kind of jamming around after a day of demo with the Hilti driver, and just, you know, my hands were kind of throbbing, like still pulsating with the rhythm of using the Hilti driver. And, you know, we kind of came up with a couple names, and one of them was the Hilties. And, you know, we enjoyed the reliability of the percussive nature of a Hilti driver. So
right.
That's kind of where that came from. And then I met Phil, who was the third founding member at the Ironwood in Calgary. And I was just there by myself playing, and I was playing my ukulele, and he kind of came up to me out in the smoke pit and asked me if I wanted to join him on, I think it was like a 1-4-5 and E or something like that. And I kind of shied away from just jumping in with people just because I'd had a couple bad experiences. But I looked over and saw him tuning a Chapman stick. So at which point I was like, yes, I'll play. Let's do it. And after that set, I was like, we should start a band. And I've already kind of got the project. So for years we played as a three-piece, just ukulele, Chapman stick, and Mark on vocals, and us all kind of trying to sing. And we added a drummer at a couple years after that, and then I met Sam going to Selkirk College, which, you know, is the meeting ground, I think, for a lot of cool musicians in these parts. And I'd always kind of tried to figure out a spot or a place where me and Sam could work together. And at the time, the Hilties were kind of on the back burner because people were kind of all over the place, and I was playing with an act called Cold Mountain Air. And I brought Sam out because two of the guys in that were brothers, and they were battling, and the lead guitar didn't want to play with us anymore, so I brought Sam in. And he immediately started battling with the same guy. I said, well, okay, I guess that's not going to work, but what about the Hilties? So, and at which point, Cole Mountaineer kind of broke up. The Hilties kind of got the fire stoked again. And one or two rehearsals with Sam, and it was pretty obvious that it was a good fit. So,
I'm just curious. You touched on something there that you had some bad experiences jumping in and jamming with people.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a rule at this point in my music career that you know, nobody gets hurt playing music. So I'm quite fearless about jumping in and playing with whoever, and just trusting that there will be some level of musicality to whatever transpires. What happened that didn't feel so good for you?
Oh, well, this was just probably going back to the days when I was just learning and I knew what I wanted to sound like, and I'd had some drummers just jump in, because like the open stages back where I learned to play in Thunder Bay, and there was pretty good music scene there, but there was always a drum kit. So like if you were playing as a solo artist, you know, I close my eyes, and before I know it, when I'm playing, I've got other people playing with me.
Mm.
And a couple times, it didn't really go the way I wanted it to.
Right. And so it wasn't necessarily you jumping in and not being able to hold your own. It was other people jumping in on your stuff.
With just, you know, knowing what I wanted to, like, I had a loose idea of the three chords and the way that they were supposed to go. And
right.
When that didn't happen, it just made me apprehensive. If I hadn't seen somebody play, to jump on stage with them was probably not what I wanted to do. But
yeah,
I mean, I think I've come a long way from that. And I really do like being put into uncomfortable places now. It's a method of growing for sure.
Definitely. So then you said a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago or so, is when Sam came into the band?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're currently a six-piece.
Yeah.
Right. One thing that I've kind of recognized is, you know, there have been some member changes and stuff like that through the Hilties. I'm curious what that does to the sound and the dynamics of the music itself when, you know, one personality exits and another one comes in. What have you found?
It was mainly just the drummers that changed constantly, eh?
Yeah.
So, first one was Patrick.
Yeah.
I guess. I wasn't in the band at that point. Mm-hmm. And then it was Victor, I believe. Mm-hmm. He had more of a Latin kind of style of drumming.
Mm-hmm.
Really dancey kind of stuff. And, he definitely had a unique sound that he brought to the band.
Yeah, it was funny, actually. Victor is the drummer for Freak Motif. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point we were playing Inferno or somewhere, and a girl came up to the merch booth and she was like, "Your drummer sounds just like the guy from Freak Motif." And I was like, "Well, it's the same guy."
Good ears.
Yeah. I know. It's I think it's rare to have a drummer where you can like pick out the sound.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But well, that's a testament to his ability, yeah.
He's definitely an incredible drummer.
Really good.
We really enjoyed working with him. He just, family calls. He had a little baby girl, and having multiple acts while trying to support a family, it's just one of those things that happens.
Yeah. He also DJs, too.
Yeah.
Vira Vira is his DJ name.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually met Victor through my previous employment. I was working as an employment counselor in construction, and helped him get started in his apprenticeship doing the construction thing. And
nice.
Isn't it fascinating how construction and music seems to overlap?
Well, yeah, actually funny you mentioned that, because I went to school for carpentry. I mean, I didn't finish the program, but in studying it, I learned that Pythagoras worked on both the Pythagorean theory, which is a lot of the geometry you use in carpentry. He also wrote music theory.
Oh.
And in doing geometry all day, I would try to unwind by playing music, and I realized I was much more fluent. And it was just the pattern and shape repetition and, like, you know, method solving problems and stuff like that, they do kind of complement each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you always kind of find guys that, you know, are good with their hands swinging a hammer. They're also good with their hands, you know, playing drums or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a Red Seal carpenter myself, and same thing. And maybe there's a lifestyle crossover that works really well for it, because you know you can adjust your schedule somewhat to accommodate a music career too.
Yeah. Normally have weekends off, I guess. So that's when you want to be playing gigs.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me a little bit about the writing process. So, are you the principal songwriter? Is it more of a collaborative, collective thing?
Yeah, to start, a lot of the ideas, I mean, with the song Two Ladies that we won 2018 Kootenai Music Award for Best Reggae Song, I wrote the lyrics and the chords, which is pretty simple, two chord song. But the beauty of working with all of these incredible musicians is that if I come up with an idea and then it gets put through kind of like the workshop of playing it with all these guys, it takes on a totally different sound and meaning. And like with Two Ladies, Mark ended up putting another verse or two on at the end, and it actually kind of comes from different places all the time. Like with the new stuff that we're working on, we've done more of a collaborative writing approach where, you know, basing something around one of Sam's riffs, or coming up with an A and B and C section just kind of while we're jamming, having Raj there that he can easily just, you know, Ableton record certain parts, and then we can revisit them and move them in different areas and reshape them.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times, Mark will just be kind of like workshopping lyrics, and then, you know, we'll have kind of like a loose outline, and then we kind of bounce them off each other and see kind of where it comes out. I guess delivered that we won Best Jam Band at the Kootenai Music Awards last year was based on something that Sam came up with.
Yeah, that was, we came up with that improvising live,
Yeah, a lot of the music parts come from, you know, somebody not being ready on stage to start the next song, and somebody will just start something.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody will kind of jump in on it, and you know, we record everything that we do. We try to.
Yeah.
And then, especially when we're touring, we'll go back to the hotel and watch the whole show again. And, you know, my wife is like, but I just watched this. And I'm like, well, that's just part of the process for us. And if it's not that night, it'll be like on the road to the next show, we'll put it on in the car, and you know, we'll be like, oh, that part was really cool, or like, what's that? That's the totally different song that we don't even have yet. And then, you know, revisit it and kind of build on it.
Mm. Yeah. I'm of the same mindset. I record so many different things, and I probably have gigabytes and gigabytes of garbage that will never be listened to again. But just to be able to go back and listen to it, and like you said, kind of pick through it and go, there's something that we should revisit and figure out, or, you know, those happy accidents.
Yeah.
For sure.
Or something you should never do again.
Yeah, that was gross. Don't do that again. Yeah. Or how about when, like, the sound guy thinks he's a part of the band? We've had a couple.
Oh, my God.
No naming names, but, you know, when someone thinks that they're part of the band and, you know,
adding vocal effects
all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we got the proof. We were listening to it after, like, who was on the soundboard?
Yeah.
Right. Not complimenting the music.
No, not at all.
It's just such a pleasure to work with really good people, because so often, you know, people are just cutting their teeth and getting, you know, used to the systems that they're using. And when you work with somebody that's really good, it stands out.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're considering sort of down the road, is having people of your own, you know, your own crew, a sound guy?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And we do to an extent with having Raj there. Like, Raj is an incredible producer. He also does, you know, he ran sound at Bloom for at least a year or so when they were getting started. And he's got a really good mind for setup, and like, he can like literally pick out the DB that's feeding back to the sound guy.
Right.
And like, he'll just say it and be like, yep, that was it.
Yeah.
So we kind of do have a sound guy there, but he'd rather just be, you know, getting ready to play the show, yeah, instead of setting up the system as well.
Yeah. I've talked to people, you know, who have their own studios and stuff like that about the difficulty in, being the artist and the engineer and the producer and kind of wearing all those hats at the same time. And you kind of just need to pick one, mm-hmm, to really get a good vibe on it.
Yeah, you can't do everything.
Yeah. Let's run through the current lineup of the band. We've got you two here. You've mentioned Raj. Yeah.
Raj Levinson is a keyboard player.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Eric on drums. And then we've got Phil on Chapman stick and Mark on vocals.
Right. And this current lineup's been together for how long now?
Eric joined not even a year ago, or yeah, start of the summer, I guess.
Yeah, when Victor was having to pull back,
mm-hmm,
we did a set of auditions. We had a bunch of really good people come and sit in with us. We had Ness come in, and we had a couple other different guys, and Eric was the right fit. And then in playing with him like only a couple times, we felt like, you know, it feels like, you know, we're complete now.
Nice.
Yes.
that feeling though, like, but we played with a bunch of drummers that, you know, were really talented drummers, but they just weren't like, you know, the fit personality wise. Like, when we, you know, we played over 100 shows in 2018-19, and when you're on the road that much together, you know, there's got to be some sort of connection as well, aside from the music.
Mm.
You know, even if it's just, you know, poking fun at each other and laughing and, you know, telling funny stories.
Yeah.
There's got to be some sort of link.
Yeah.
And Eric definitely fits the mold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He understands their sense of humor, I guess.
That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't take it too personally.
Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah, when you're in a truck for 12 hours.
You're talking about adding new members and finding that right chemistry and, you know, people who are, you know, highly talented and capable on their instruments. It reminded me of way back when Metallica was replacing Jason Newsted, and they had all their auditions, and there's a video online of it, and they've got, like, you know, all these different bass players, and Les, yeah, Claypool from Primus went in there and did an audition, and they were just, if I remember it correctly, the guys from Metallica were just like, holy shit,
too
I don't
good?
Know what to do with
yeah.
Like, that's pretty cool, but mm-hmm, I don't think it fits what we're doing.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's when they got, what's his name again? Robert
Trujillo, yeah.
Trujillo, that's,
yeah,
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure Victor will correct my pronunciation of that. So recently, I guess, there's a batch of new songs that you guys have gone into, mm-hmm, Sincerity Sound. Shout out, Slocan, yeah, Valley Studios.
Yep.
You want to tell us a little bit about your experience going into the studio and doing that?
Yeah, it was lots of fun. Barry definitely knows what he's doing. And it was more of a live recording. We took each song, like, I don't know, two or three times, just to, mainly to get the drums down, and anything we screw it up on, we could just overdub later on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just drums. While it's all set up, you gotta get it down for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's about 12 songs on the album.
Yeah, there's 12 songs. Well, there's 13, and then we have a couple other ones that might stand alone as singles after the fact. But yeah, it's probably 10 to 12 songs that we're looking at. And yeah, we're in the midst of mixing them. And yeah, the album comes out April 20th, and we're going to have a single come out slightly before that.
Mm-hmm.
So And then we'll have our album release tour, and then we've got lots of exciting things coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we're playing at the Royal April 17th, just a couple days before the release.
Yeah.
And then we're off to Kelowna, and then we're playing Doc Willoughby's on the 18th. Then we're out to the coast, and we're going to be doing a couple interviews out there. I think we're going to be on CTV, and then we're doing the Railtown. Is it Railtown?
Railway Club?
Railway Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vancouver.
Railway Club, and then we're doing the Naughty Burl in Squamish, and then out to the island, going up to Tofino, playing at the Legion. And then back kind of east.
All the way back to Nelson, pretty much.
Back to Nelson, and then we're out in Fernie at the Northern, in the early May, and then Lethbridge, and that's the end of the tour.
Right.
So 3 weeks on the road.
Right. Have you toured outside of that radius much?
Mainly Alberta's the furthest we go. We go to, like, Canmore and Banff sometimes, mm-hmm. Calgary. We played in Edmonton, but not too much further than that.
Yeah.
We intend on pushing outside of our bubble.
Yeah.
You got to prove yourself at home and get that support, and then slowly start pushing it outside there. And it's, we're getting a lot of good response this year. As things are progressing and, you know, creating as much content as we can, it's showing a bit of value for people to kind of, you know, take that chance to have us out the first time. And as we've always said, just put us in front of the crowd and we'll show you what we do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, we play somewhere once, and as we're packing up, they want to book the next show. So that's kind of proving that our model is working.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking earlier about creating content and having a steady stream of things showing up online just to, you know, satiate people's attention spans and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just the idea of brand awareness is, like, you know, all of these things that labels used to do for artists that nowadays, if you were to sign with a label, you know, you'd have to give them a 360 deal, which, you know, they then take control of everything. And technology, where it is these days, it's put all of those different things right into our own hands. And by no means is it easy. Like, I mean, I'm sure I've had a bunch of videos where, you know, like, for example, the last one we did was for the CBC Searchlight contest. And, you know, it's such a weird thing for a musician to, like, just blatantly ask somebody to vote for them. It feels wrong.
Right.
Like, that feeling, like, it just doesn't, like, it's hard to, like, genuinely have that ask. And even, you know, my dad called me up after. He's like, this video, he's like, I like what you do, but this one, I don't know. And I'm like, well, a lot of people responded quite well to it because I was trying to be candid and, like, honest and just say, you know, like, listen, I'm not going to put this in your face every 5 seconds, but we're in this contest and it will help us, you know, grow what we're doing into new markets. So if you could vote for us. You know,
it was just kind of funny too. You added a bit of humor into it, so that helps.
Yeah, I watched it. I thought the same thing. And by the end of it, you know, I did feel an endearment and, you know, oh, this isn't, you know, there's the super polished approach where, you know, it's like, how much time do you need to put into production to just go on and connect with somebody and feel like you're having an authentic connection with people. And that kind of comes across in the music as well. You can feel that there's a live sense to the music, and that's where it's going to connect with people is when they're right in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to when I was, you know, forming my love for the style of, like, the jam band was, like, back to, like, Fish and Dave Matthews and stuff like that, when I was listening to those guys, and how listening to interviews and how they had such a hard time translating it to a studio album.
Mm.
You know, because the song, any of our songs, you know, could go easily over 10 minutes when we're playing live. And, you know, we're not Tool. We can't put out a 10-minute song on our album and have people respond well to it, like, in the majority markets. Right. So that idea of us trying to, you know, pull the intro off, maybe not do a couple of different solos, it's good. I mean, it's confining us and forcing us to be more creative in a confined space,
mm-hmm.
which I think refines the songs.
Mm-hmm. Just makes it extra special when you get to see that live too. Just people are used to the short version, but it could end up being 10 minutes with a gnarly keyboard solo or something. You never know.
Yeah, and you know, somebody sees you play here in Nelson, and then they go to Kelowna and see you play, and the same song sounds a little bit different.
Yeah.
I'm of the same mindset, you know, the Fish and Dave Matthews and that sort of thing, and that's why you can buy tickets to 10 shows in a row.
Yeah,
and you know, 80% of the population looks at you like you're crazy. What do you mean you're going to see them? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, it's because it's never the same way twice.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like the feel of the night could you know, if people are going crazy, it tends to.
There's been mosh pits before.
Well, yeah, there's been crowd surfing and mosh pits, and it tends to, you know, push the song into a new. It takes on a life of its own. It gets excited in itself, and you know, that's kind of the beauty of the style of music we're playing to. It's also the curse of the style of music we're playing to when it comes to getting any type of funding or you know, any type of situation like that. A lot of that tends to want you to pigeonhole yourself. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we're looking for, you know, what genre are we in? I don't know.
Funk, reggae, rock, sometimes metal-ish.
Yeah, there's just... And the problem, I think, with the way that a lot of the funding bodies are set up is that they fund within a category. You know, like, if we enter as a rock band, we're then competing against people who are actually rock bands.
Yeah. Right.
And we just, like, people be like, that's good, but it's not a rock band. And so that's kind of one of the things we're battling against, and it feels a bit like, I mean, which I'm sure it does to everybody trying to get funding, a bit of an uphill battle, just trying to prove that there's merit in something that hasn't been done before.
Right,
because they want to hedge their bets and say, you know, like, this type of model is successful and we're okay with funding it. Where that's not really what I think art should be about. I mean, it should be like, no one's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and being done well.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's doing this and it's, you know, scribbled with crayons or, you know, mm-hmm. something that needs to be honed still in an original package is one thing. But when you got people who know what they're doing and how to play their instruments and they are creating something that is, you know, different. I agree. I think that would be great to have more opportunities for funding. Yeah. What do you think of, you know, there is a lot more funding, it seems like, nowadays for creative artists and stuff like that, especially in BC with Creative BC. And we've got the, you know, the Kootenai, help me out here, the CK.
Columbia Basin Trust?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that they're putting money into it. That's really important. Mm. I really do. And I've actually just the other night I was looking through the Creative BC list of people who got funding, and I know a lot of them, and they genuinely have worked for that funding.
Mm.
I think that just personally, like I've attended, you know, BC Touring Council workshops. I went to the creative workshop when it was here down at the Capitol Theater there. And there are such, you know, I think that you just can't put all of your eggs in a funding basket. You need to be able to just do it anyway. Because the funding, I feel like, is there to push you over the top or to support you once you've already, you know, started to break. I wish there was more funding to get people interested in it.
Right.
You know, at the more grassroots levels where, you know, people are trying, you know, and there is to an extent, and I don't really know, you know, the full extent as to things that get funded. I just see that in this neighborhood, like in Nelson specifically, there's a lot of out there ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of thing that pushes the arts into new areas, and I think they should have just as easy a time, or at least just be getting some sort of support system.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. And you're right. There's it's a hotbed of creativity and new ideas, and you know, the next great things are just around the corner from all of these potential new artists and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any formal schooling or anything music-wise that you or the other people in the band have undertaken?
I've been to a couple week-long guitar workshops in Toronto. Went a couple years in a row. They had some really good guitar players teaching there, like John Petrucci from Dream Theater was there giving some lessons. Who else? Joe Satriani's been there. Paul Gilbert, Devin Townsend. Who else? Don Ross, really good acoustic guitar player. So yeah, that helped me a lot. And after that, I guess Selkirk College would be the only other thing. That's where I met Craig,
actually. Yeah. You guys did the program there?
Yeah, we both did the first semester.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up leaving back to Montreal. I kind of missed my metal band back there.
Oh, yeah.
So, and yeah, Craig stuck around for a little bit longer.
I stuck around a little longer, but I didn't have the chops to keep all of the courses at passing levels.
So, right.
Yeah, and I know that Phil, our Chapman stick player, studied percussion. I think in Vancouver. And I'm not sure if Raj has any formal training. I mean, Raj was homeschooled, and then I don't know. I think he was just probably born with some crazy talent. I don't know where his comes from, but it's actually fantastic working with Sam and Raj together, because they both have this uncanny knowledge of where things are, and because, like, why they're there, and this because of that, and that because of this, and I'm kind of just like, what are the chords?
Yeah.
You know, but so it's forcing me to, you know, like, take my notes, and like I do my homework as much as I can, and I really applaud these guys for having the patience to work with me.
Gotta stop forgetting your notepad, though.
Yeah, come on.
I wanted to ask about sort of going back to the online content and stuff like that. Last year, you brought out an animated video. Can we just get a bit of the story around that, where that came from, who the artist was, and some of the story that surrounded
that? Yeah, well,
it's
actually kind of a great combo with we have been introduced to Jesse Stasiak, who was the the animating artist, and he went to Selkirk. He did his degree in digital design there. I hope that's the right degree that he did. But Raj, with his other group, Intersect, had worked with him before, and we saw, like, the talent that this guy had, you know. And so when it comes to the song, Mark and I wrote the lyrics, and then, you know, it was one of those things where we have these recording devices, our cell phones on us at all times, and, you know, we go back through them, and we're like, I think it was actually the day I was quitting smoking, which is now 4 years ago, because you could hear me in the recording smoking, and Mark's asking me, you know, like, he's like, that's like your fourth cigarette. And I'm like, but they told me it's my last day. I got to smoke four in a row. That was the last time I smoked. But then right after that was this four chord progression, which we ended up transposing into another key, and ended up having this story that's just so familiar to everybody about that love that was just, that was your partner. Everybody's felt that way, hopefully. I mean, I'm sure some people haven't, but you know that love where it's the one when it happens, and then it just slowly, as people grow older, it falls apart and people go in different directions. And it was just the kind of idea of, like, looking back at, like, that idea of, you know, being so sure in what you were doing, and then somehow you feel like you're almost teleported to a place where everything's fallen apart. And everybody kind of can relate to that idea of knowing where they were going and then having to rework everything and move on. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where the idea for that song came mm-hmm. from. And then I kind of came up with the idea of, like, we were looking at grant funding for it, and instead of putting a bunch of time into that, I figured, you know, we have this community that is so supportive of the arts. There's so many great people here. So I kind of shopped it around, and we had NBC, Nelson Brewing Company, and Ripping Giraffe, and Legion HQ, which were our main people that got on board. And also the Hume Hotel. And they kind of, I had some rough framework where it was like, you know, for this type of involvement, we're going to do this and that. And, like, it kind of became tailored to each person's involvement. Like, with NBC, they named a beer after us. Ironically, right when I quit drinking.
Yeah.
Perfect timing.
It was a white
beer. I'm sure it was good.
Yeah. I did have one. But, and then them lending their social network to us, that was kind of how they got involved. Then we had Ripping Giraffe, who came on board with, you know, monetary involvement to help us fund the project, as well as, you know, every show we played, they'd give us merchandise to give out to, like, the kids and stuff, and people who are at the thing, to engage the community and get people up and get them dancing and get them, you know, involved in having a good time and, you know, expressing themselves. And then we had the Hume come on board with lending us their social network and putting the album release together, or the single video release. And so then we incorporated all of them into the video, like, visually. Mm. Where I think we walked that line of being like an advertisement. We didn't want to be an advertisement, but we wanted to show that we had a community that was involved.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm pretty proud of all of the work that everybody put into that, and the community came and supported it. So it was a really good, I was really happy with it.
Yeah, it was really cool, and I like how having a better understanding of, you know, what the involvement was of some of those companies, and they're all local companies, so it's not like you got some multinational, you know, Budweiser presents sort of thing or something like that. One of the questions that floats around right now in the music industry, of course, since streaming has come on and sort of really diminished the return that people are getting for just creating music, is what is the next income stream and how are artists being innovative in approaching releasing their music and making a living as musicians. So those sound like really interesting partnerships, and I like how there was a piggybacking of the social networks, because that's, you know, it's all about awareness and stuff like that. So if you've got brands and businesses that have a broad network that you can access, that's really cool.
It's funny that you bring that up, because for our upcoming album release tour and moving into the future with our new album coming out, we've come up with a new initiative that we've dubbed the Tour Lightly Initiative, which kind of comes from the idea of all of this unrest that's happening right now and the egregious violation of human rights to do with this pipeline stuff. And, you know, I'm not heavily political with the way that we write, and like, but I feel like if we can somehow give from where we are, it's gonna benefit. So like, basically what we came up with was the idea that we can kind of control our stuff in-house, and then we came up with the idea that we wanted to be involved with environmentally minded charities. So that led us to the idea that we were going to do a portion of each merchandise sale, which is a dollar from us, but I mean, we don't have a ton of money, so anything from us really is a good thing. And that would be, from every merch sale, $1 gets donated to a charity, and we're hoping to work with the Eco Society. And that in itself seems kind of small, but then I've reached out to a lot of people that we've worked with in the past on this other projects, and they're going to be matching our donations.
Cool.
So that $1 is now looking more like $5. And you know, it's, I think that in anything we can do on our own level, we gotta try to start doing it, because it's a supply and demand thing. And with us being touring artists, we burn a lot of gas. And that, there's just no way around that until Elon sends us our solar
Cybertruck.
Yes, solar Cybertrucks to tour with. You know, we're delivering our music to communities, and we want to then somehow figure out a way to offset our footprint. So along with the donating of funds to environmentally based charities, we've also eliminated all single-use plastics from our hospitality riders, like no bottles of water, no plastic cups, and no, you know, straws and stuff like that. And then we took it one step further, and I've sourced compostable packaging for anything that we ship merchandise or correspondence. So that's just kind of like a three-tier idea where we're trying to then offset how we're impacting. And then we want other people to see how they can be involved. Like my great vision for this would be, you know, other bigger bands that can really have big impacts to sign on to this type of idea. Because they really can. You know, like, I think I read an article about Jack Johnson. His rider looks like, you know, he plays a stadium, and instead of getting, you know, 1,000 brown M&Ms and bottles of water, they have to switch all of their lights to LED. And they have to, like, he's forcing the change upon them.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the idea that we're looking to go towards. Thank you.
storm begins. Your last breath of smoke you let into the room. It makes a cloud like the grayest perfect gloom. Baby, smoke, baby, smoke, baby. More alcohol, baby. Cocaine in Montreal and pass out on the plane, baby. An early flight, we're leaving on it.
Like fly around in jets, we just want to play music. We mm-hmm. don't want to have to go and swing a hammer and break our arms to play music, mm-hmm. but it's the reality of the situations. That's what we have to do. Mm. So when people support it, it means a lot to us. It means so much more than just, you know, going to buy a coffee with that $5 that somebody put in our tip jar. Mm-hmm. That means that we can write another song and play another show, and the people that come to that show have had a horrible day because of the world we live in. For that half an hour, they can live in the present and be happy mm-hmm. and, like, relieve some of the stress that is just the world around us.
Mm-hmm. You said you don't really get political in the music and stuff that you're writing. What sort of inspiration do you draw from lyrically and even musically?
I tend to write stuff that I can't stop thinking about. Like, I get plagued by ideas, and I feel like if it sticks around, then I've got to write something about it, and it's kind of like a... yeah, like... I can't stop thinking about something, so then I feel like when that happens, that I'm passionate about enough about a subject to want to share it. And I mean, there's that Nathaniel Rateliff line, 1 out of 10, you know, you got to write 10 at least just to hit one, but those odds aren't bad, and it's really more like, you know, 1 in a million.
Right.
So you just kind of got to keep pumping it out. You just got to keep saying something, and hopefully you hit a note on something that people can relate to.
Yeah.
I just think of the melodies. Not much of a lyric guy.
Sam's got some all sorts of, I don't know where you're, I joke around and call them demons, but they come out in these forms of expression that people are quite taken back by.
Yeah, I usually work on more of the emotional feeling kind of melodies of the band, I guess. You guys are a little more funky than I am, but well, try to bring out some.
I think part of the thing that gives you your unique flavor would be that, you know, the metal background. Mm-hmm. People are used to hearing, like, you know, jazz and funk and all those things kind of together when you have this, like, classical bass, like, metal type of situation, and then you lay that over. Like, you wouldn't really necessarily hear that form of expression over top of, you know, the rhythm sections that we come up with.
Yeah. Mm. It's more of a mix of, yeah, blues, and I still use a lot of, like, the scales I'd use in metal. And somehow it worked out really nice with funk reggae music. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Was there a jam element to your past playing when you're talking about, like, the metal and stuff like that? Or is this more improvised?
This is much more... Yeah, I played our first show together, or my first show with you guys, just straight up improvising the whole time. It's always been kind of a specialty of mine, but when I used to play metal, it was just very I would write a song and stick to that way and
right.
not really elaborate on it.
There's not a lot of metal jam bands, are there?
Not so much, actually. Yeah, it's much more structured musically, I think.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe
I could be wrong, but
that's giving you a bit of freedom to express yourself more, like with using that toolkit within, you know, like that's what they say about jazz. It's like you hit the wrong note twice, it's the right note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like forcing yourself to constantly be expressing but not being held back by the confines of, you know, the that's why I call it classical structure. You know, it's like this is it, this is where you go. But in, you know, you take that those tools over to a more free form of expression, and you wind up with something like the Hilties.
And there's musicians that you can put a piece of music that's composed and written in front of them, and they can play it note for note effortlessly, but they don't translate that into a jam situation.
Yeah, definitely. You
know, people bring out their guitars in the living room and start playing, and you know, this person who plays the piano every day and does all these classical pieces, they
don't know what to do.
Kind of freeze. Yeah. Which is fascinating to me. It just comes so easily to me to just sit down and play.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got some familiarity with your instrument, if you can get over the need to play something right and just kind of jump in and feel where the sound moves you, it's hard to quantize improvisation, I think, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Except in hindsight, when you listen back and go, oh, neat, you hear where that went to this, and then this happened, and things kind of go from there.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Just got to get used to things potentially going wrong sometimes, too, and know how to get around it and mm-hmm. fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, not fall apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, keep going. And that's, again, that's my philosophy. Nobody gets hurt. So I could play 100 notes wrong in a row, mm-hmm. and everybody still goes home. You know, all intact, and you know, nobody loses their house or breaks their arm or anything just because I played a bad note. It just means that I might have to go and learn some more notes for the next one or something.
It's for the better, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I really like is trying to find variation within the rhythm. Like, that's why I love our new situation with Eric on drums is that, like, our songs, typically, were 2-3 chord songs, and to find some sort of, you know, variation within that, where somebody will follow you, you know, like there'll be like 2 bars of me doing something that doesn't sound like it fits,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden the drums will come onto it, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, you know, Sam and Raj are looking at each other and they're harmonizing a new lead melody on it, and it and they all kind of feed into each other.
Yeah.
And I love my position in the band because I can spark those changes, whereas, like, you know, and Eric's getting more confident that he can, like, lead those changes too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our music's a lot more experimental now, I'd say.
Yeah.
Must be exciting to start looking forward to a bunch of shows on the road to mm-hmm. to really expand that some more. Do you Definitely. Find there's much of a difference coming out of the rehearsal room and getting on stage in a tour situation?
Yeah, we're always super tight by the end of a tour.
Yeah.
And we don't recycle the set lists.
Yeah.
I keep every single one of them so we can look at them, but we always kind of sit down. In fact, actually, I'm not really a part of, like, Mark and Sam and Raj like to sit down and come up with, like, you know, they'll be in the room that we're playing, sitting there having, you know, the comped meal. Hopefully, we'd like to get comped meals, but it doesn't happen every time. But, you know, they'll feel the room and be like, okay, well, it's going to take a minute for people to get interested, so let's start this way. Or, mm-hmm. you know, people are already here and they're already dancing,
yeah.
so we want to come flying out of the gate. Like, it's always different,
mm-hmm.
and then that leads even the songs themselves to take on different energies and flow. And then in listening back, we can be like, oh, that song actually sounds better, like, laid back, or mm-hmm. you know, with with the pocket feeling a bit like pushed backwards, or say we have to come flying out of the gate, we're like, you know, on and on, the single that is going to be coming out has taken a whole new feel because we had to push it to make it make sense in a certain situation, and fell in love with that new approach, and now it's a totally different song. Yeah. than where it was.
Mm-hmm. That one's recorded from like 2013, eh? It's going to sound much different.
Yeah, well, if you take the, on our demo that we did years ago, just really hard to listen to for me.
Yeah.
but if you compare those to where they are now, it's like, you know, you can see the evolution of it.
Right. Yeah, and that's great. I think that's important to be able to see where a band comes from and hear where they're at now. Mm-hmm. So am I understanding correctly that you've re-recorded On and On? You know, you've got an earlier version, and now there's a mm-hmm. new updated one that'll be released.
Pretty much a different band, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different song. Even the lyrics are different.
Mm.
And the you know, the bass line structure, the bass, like, will still, you know, you'll be able to hear where it came from, but it's, you know, as, you know, three or four bars in, you're like, this is a totally different song.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's, I don't know, we tend to not really get tied to certain ways of it,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, some songs just die.
Yeah.
And some songs get reborn, and On and On is one of those that got reborn, because in playing with one of the setups we had with I think when we were playing with Clayton, he was fantastic drummer, but some of our grooves weren't hitting anymore. Mm-hmm. And those songs, like, some of them did die, but some of them got pushed into such an awkward place that when we brought somebody else in, they had to be totally reworked.
Right.
And
I guess Eric kind of brought it back, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, songs where we were like, we don't want to play those anymore. Now all of a sudden it's, we want to re-record it because it's a totally different thing now.
Right. So what is available right now at this point prior to the album release? I see there's a couple of videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
And the Spotify account has two songs that are sitting on it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have Moving On was the first single we put out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one we did the video for. And then we have Delivered, which was the second single. Those aren't going to be on the album. Mm-hmm. So all the 10 to 12 songs are all going to be fresh. And, yeah, we'll have one single coming out probably mid to late March, and then the full album comes out April 20th. And it's funny, like, we talk about this album, we've already got a whole bunch of new songs, so that, like, when we're touring this album, you'll be hearing the next album too.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is great, because, you know, having Sam and Raj and these other new components, it's becoming, we're a lot more diverse. We're having, you know, they're not two chord songs anymore.
Right.
They have the, you know, that hook, that feeling that you can get into of that, you know, the groove,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot more complexity to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, for content, we've got at least, I don't know, 40 live videos.
Yeah.
Right.
A bunch of different shows, and there's a video, like, for instance, we hiked up to Pulpit Rock just with acoustic stuff, little bit of percussion vocals, and we just film little random videos here and there.
Yeah, so we have a couple different series that we'll be getting more into that when we're on the road, because, you know, that's what we like to do, is like pull over on the side of the highway. This is where it started. We did our first, our first acoustic session was right here on the front step. Then we were in between Banff and Radium, pulled off on the side of the highway, did an acoustic session there.
Hmm.
So that was the second episode. Then we were trying to think of the third one. So we hiked up Pulpit, did one from the top of Pulpit. So we'll kind of continue with that. But the idea that I try to maintain is constantly getting a bit better.
Right.
With every bit of content, we want to be, you know, like adding a bit more of a development to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, because it'll keep people interested in what's coming next.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a whole series leading up to this album called Behind the Hooks. And that's kind of just showcasing the different musical hooks that we're using in the song. So, like, you know, Sam and I were talking the other day about we did with one of our other projects, we have we kind of do like a yacht rock approach where we did Sultan's the Swing by Dire Straits.
Mm-hmm.
And it sparked this online battle about how it wasn't the actual riff. Like, there's just so many people that have such strong opinions about some pieces of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because it ends up getting us more views because they start arguing about
yeah.
it. And
then yeah,
some people start defending it, saying it's, you know, a fresh take on it. Some people are like, he probably can't even play the real riff. And yeah. it just keeps going back and forth. And which led me to see this interview with Mark Knopfler about that exact thing. And he said, you know, people, you know, have lived their lives by these hooks, and it's defined them.
Yeah.
And that iconic, you know, I call it the diddle diddles. Yeah, that one, and that bend is a part that people really know that song.
I definitely
for.
Do that every yeah. time.
But. Yeah, but so he was talking about, you know, his crowd not engaging that song anymore, and I think it was his wife or something said to him, it's because they put their shoes on to that bend. You know, they got dressed and combed their hair and had their family to that solo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that art of walking that line of showcasing that piece where people are like, I've heard this, and mm-hmm. they engage and they're a part of, you know, what's happening. But then having, you know, the ability to give it new life, which mm-hmm. Sam, I don't think ever does it the same way twice. So
in a good way.
Yeah. 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 Well, you'll hear that hook, which is what we were trying to go for with the Behind the Hooks episodes, is to show you those little pieces that make the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's us truly interacting musically on stage, which gives the rest of the body of the piece of music.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to touch on? Things that are coming up?
I think, yeah, I mean,
are you side projects? Should we?
Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah. That. Thank you for reminding me.
Projects. Well, Sam can tell you about what
him. So me and the singer of the Hilties, Mark, we've got a project called Chimp It. It's electronic music mixed with more of a live element. I play guitar, well, electric and acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark does vocals and DJs also. It's, a lot of it's very funky, dancey music with plenty of shredding guitar solos, and our original stuff is kind of like more melodic, acoustic, electronic music. It's hard to put a name on it, but it's kind of in the same realm as, like, I don't know, Moon Tricks or something like that.
Right.
Just the live aspect to it.
Yeah.
And, we actually got to open for Moon Tricks not too long ago, which was a pleasure. And, yeah, hopefully we got plenty more shows coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've got a couple of actual side projects. So we played for a long time. I have a lot of kind of like folk-based, like jazzy feel stuff that doesn't really make sense with the Hilties.
Mm-hmm. Original music?
Some of it is, and some of it is just songs that I grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
And songs that, like, you know, With Sam and I, I'll play something and like he'll be like, oh, my dad showed me that song and my dad showed me that song. So,
yeah.
You know, it's this familiar background where we, you know, try to give them a new life
And make our dads proud.
That's right. So that started as the Craig Walter Trio, and I didn't really like the name because it's really not just about me. These guys are, you know, I wouldn't be able to make those sounds if it weren't for them and getting more of their input. So we've rebranded it as SERC Quattro, and that's kind of like a, yeah, like a yacht rock meets like folk. And then, you know, we can play to the room, so we could play a dancey set, or we could also play a dinner set with it. We're going to be playing out at Maydays for that, with that format.
Is that Caslow Maydays?
Yeah, Caslow, yeah. Maydays. I think it's the May long weekend.
Right.
And opening for the Boom Booms too.
Yeah.
March 13th?
March?
I think, yeah. Pretty sure.
At Bloom. And then, so Raj has another project that he works with, Intersect, which mm-hmm. is kind of how we got on to working with Jesse Stasiak, the animator.
Yeah.
They've worked together, him and Scott, who, they were in Wasabi Collective back in the day.
Right.
And, let's just see, I think that's it. So, if people are interested in kind of the other types of formats that the Hilties come in, they can check out thehilties.com, and there's a drop down menu there that has side projects and links to get in touch with everybody. A lot of the time, you know, with there being six people, somebody's booked on a certain date, so it's you know, you may not be able to have six people there, but, you know, having the versatility of being able to go to a four-piece or to have the two-piece on the road with us, you know, we need to be able to play any show that's available.
Mm-hmm.
So with our album release tour, there's going to be probably a couple Chimpet sets on that tour, and mm-hmm. there'll probably be a Cirque set here or there. And yeah, you kind of have to diversify it. Just so the other thing that happens too is you have proximity clauses with a lot of these big festival dates.
Right.
So to work around that, we have other projects.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of saw that model happening with the Funk Hunters with the Lazy Soup.
Lazy Syrup.
Lazy Syrup Orchestra. You know, like having the different ability to go in a different way,
mm-hmm.
and have it not take away from, well, have one take away from the other.
Yeah.
It's more of an asset than, you know, like, you know, a drawback.
Right. Are you looking at hitting up any festivals this summer?
Yeah, we have a couple we can talk about.
Yeah. There's a...
We're playing at Starbelly.
Starbelly,
yeah.
And we're playing Field Music Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's going to be a lot. So the easiest way, if people are trying to figure out which festivals they want to go to and if they want to come and see us, is just to check out thehilties.com.
Yeah.
And it has all our dates on there. And, yeah, we still have a couple windows left.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If people want a dance party.
Yeah. Great. Well, I really, really appreciate the opportunity to come and sit down and chat with you guys and learn a little bit more of the band. And
definitely.
I wish you all the best with the release of the album. Look forward to seeing that and seeing where things go this year and beyond.
Definitely.
Sweet. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care.
So that was the interview that I recorded with Sam and Craig from the Hilties back in February. Since then, obviously, things have changed quite a bit, and I've followed up with Craig this past week to get a bit of an update on where things are at for him and the Hilties since the COVID-19 pandemic has taken root in our society and caused such upheaval. Now, I realize that The quality of this audio isn't to the level that I'm used to presenting here on the show. I had to make do with the best that I had in the moment, which was a landline on speakerphone and an iPhone with its voice memo recording. But I think that it's effective in getting Craig's words and Craig's voice over to tell his side of where things are at in this current, I guess we're in the midst of our COVID-19 pandemic era. So without further ado, here's a few more thoughts from Craig Beauchamp.
So in terms of, like, obviously, you know, the way things have played out since we spoke for the podcast, yeah. Things have done a complete 180 and the basement has basically just dissolved underneath everybody's feet. You know, can you sort of articulate how that's impacted the band?
Yeah, well, obviously people are, you know, we were fucking super amped to get on the road because that's what we love to do.
Mm-hmm.
And on a personal level, I think I took the biggest hit on this thing from the band just because, you know, the guys don't get the shows. But I put, you know, the last 6 months into planning all of these shows, mm-hmm. at which point I, you know, get paid when we play the show.
Yeah.
And all my booking fees evaporated. It's definitely fodder for the cannons for me. I've been fucking writing like a madman. I wrote a part of a song about the idea of, like, you know, not even getting to miss somebody.
Mm.
Like, you know, we live back in, you know, a month or two ago, you'd, you know, in your everyday life have disagreements or whatever, but then you'd have that time when you're at work where, you know, all of those, like, flaws kind of drift away and you look at it from a different perspective and you come home and you, like, have had time to think about things. That fucking buffer space has disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, that idea of, you gotta write 10 to have one type of thing. Like, one of my advantages is I have hard ADD and I'm always skipping from one thing to another and coming back to things.
Yeah.
So the trick for me is to remember to come back.
Yeah.
Cause when I come back, I don't feel as stuck with things. And, you know, like today I did a writing process I've never ever done before just because I'm super well set up now at my house. I can just, like, let it free spin.
Yeah.
You know, like, today I was just like, so I was talking with Raj the other day about how we could write because there's no real software online where the lag time is low enough to, like, jam in real time.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's always some sort of, whether it's your connection, the other person's connection, or a million other things.
Yeah.
So what his idea was is instead of, like, I was like, well, what key should I write in? You know, like, should I aim for, you know, because we always play in D minor, or, you know, we play in A a lot, which is, you know, might as well be D minor. But anyway, I was like, you know, what types of things should I focus on? He's like, well, instead of looking at it like that, why don't you think about it like this? Like, try to write, like, just a couple riffs, which is, like, interesting for me because as a rhythm player, I'm not really riff literate.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of find little things that sound good. But, and then he's like, write a couple riffs, then write a couple two chord progressions, a couple three chord progressions, and then a couple four chord progressions. And the greatest thing about having, you know, Raj and Sam there is that we can then transport, like, if we like the pattern and, you know, we like the way that things fit, we can transpose up or down to put it into somebody's register if need be.
Mm-hmm.
And then today I was just like, you know, I did my riff song, was kind of cool, and then I was like, try to pick up my electric guitar, which is always a challenge for me to play electric by itself. I always find that that's more of a group instrument for me.
Hmm.
But I was like, I couldn't grab anything on it. Nothing was hitting. So I put it down and picked up the acoustic, and I just started playing these two chords. And like all of a sudden I started like just telling a story. And I was recording the whole thing, and out of nowhere this song just came out.
Cool.
Which was really interesting, because I've never, like, usually it's like I've got these words and I need to make some chords for it, or, you know, never kind of like freestyled, I guess. But we'll see. Maybe it's just the fucking, you know, one of the nine, and it's not the one out of ten.
Mm-hmm.
You never know that anyway.
Yeah. Well, and the lucky thing is for you, I guess, you can take that to the other people in the band, and everybody can kind of throw in some input and really elevate something like that. So maybe it was one of the nine, but it becomes, you know, the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Or gives you 2 out of 10 out of that batch or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's we're doing different structures now. Like, we, you know, I do lyric sessions with Mark for an hour or two. We try to do every day. Like, the last couple of days have been a little busy, but where, you know, we just come up with stuff, and then with Raj and I, we're doing this thing where I'm, you know, just coming up with like a couple riffs, a couple 2-chord, 3-chord, 4-chord, and then just like to a click, so that he can kind of like just plug it in on his side and mess around with it and like throw them back and forth a couple times until there's some sort of raw structure. And then Mark and I try to pop lyrics on top. So we've got, I think, 5 new tracks now, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Especially because it's being laid on to by all these other guys that are fucking... Sam has got some fucking crazy shit that comes out of that kid.
Now, the album is still scheduled to come out on April the 20th, and obviously plans have shifted in the way that you are going to be releasing it. Can you give us an update on what that's going to look like?
We're doing, for the release, we were supposed to be doing on the 17th at the Royal, we're doing a listening party instead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, you know, we're going to have, I think, 3 different locations. Like, I'll be at my house. I think Raj is going to be at his house, and then Mark and Sam are going to be together. We're just trying to get the logistics on that worked out still. But, so I think what we're going to do is, like, showcase the album. We're going to play it, and, like, we have a bunch of stuff from our sponsors. Like, we're giving away a bong, a fucking skateboard, hoodies, all sorts of shit.
Mm-hmm.
For people to share the pre, like, we did 3 short animated clips. I'm sure you've probably seen 1 or 2 of them.
Mm-hmm.
That are showcasing little snippets of the album. So people that share those are put into a draw, and at the listening party, we're going to give away a bunch of merchandise and copies of the album. And then, yeah, we got Bridge is doing a showcase on us, which is was originally going to be us doing a short performance on air, but I don't know if we probably won't be doing that. Might be some sort of pre-recorded situation now.
Right.
But and booking wise, I'm not looking at anything before the fall now.
Yeah.
Like, I've got shows in June, I've got shows in July, I've got shows in August that haven't been canceled yet, but with the amount of, you know, shows that got canceled on me in the last month, was like, you know, I was hurt by the first one, I was sad by the second one, you know. By the 10th one, it's like, all right, I get it. We're not doing anything.
Well, Craig, even though it may feel like you're not getting to do anything for the tour, for the release of this album, know that you're in good company because nobody's doing anything right now. We're all just sitting tight and waiting for this storm to pass. And then we will venture out and see what's left of our society after that. Pick up the pieces, put ourselves back together. I'm already overjoyed and quite heartwarmed to see how resilient people are being in the midst of this crisis, and just how adaptable people are being as well. Long lineups to get into grocery stores or get into places, long lineups in the grocery stores as we social distance ourselves 6 feet apart. And people are smiling and shrugging and connecting, albeit at that 6 foot distance or more. And just kind of all pitching in to make sure that we can do this the best we can. And again, we'll see how things play out on the other side of this. But if there's only one thing that I know, it's that music is going to be the cornerstone of what is getting most of us through the days and the weeks, and inevitably what it's looking like months of these conditions we're living in. And so on that note, here is The Hilties and the next single to be coming off of their new album entitled Sunshine, which will be released on April 20th. And this song is called Hocus Pocus. I'm Al Woodman. You've been listening to The Sound of the Kootenays. I look forward to coming at you again with another episode very soon. And until then, I hope you're able to stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned.
Soaks, pokes, talks, run, it's course, I'm running out. I think I say you do, but never will, that's running out. Talk is deeper than the long run, action speak aloud. Although the past has been good to your time is always now. It's always now. A story from the past can never truly make you proud. The power emanating from the mouth that speaks it out. So we're sad and up and over. Come back to the top of the boulder. When it's out and up and over, I shake out all the weight on my shoulders. I got this feeling like I'm only getting older. Ain't this heart of mine, it's over getting colder. Since the days of blaze, the click, clack, the cock, the back, the try another game of zigzag. Got a mind like a razor blade, so switch back to the facts, time, space, contain the sound of